Hello, welcome to Why Family Based Solutions podcasts. My name is Florence Kundrink and today is the 17th of December 2018. The subject of today's podcast is what institutionalization does to children. It's already been mentioned in the blog what institutionalization does to children in a theoretical manner. But in this podcast, we're going to look at the same subject through a real life story, which illustrates a lot of the aspects mentioned in that blog. Before we go on to the story, however, for the people who might not have read the blog or might not remember all that was in it, I would like to do a very quick recap of what children need and what they are not getting in institutions, generally speaking. When people talk about children's basic needs, they usually think about things like food, clothing, shelter, a need for hygiene, and maybe education. And to a certain extent, these things tend to be taken care of in institutions. And that's one of the reasons why people feel that institutionalization is probably not such a bad thing. They're getting the main things. The problem is that the things just mentioned are only a child's practical needs, as I call them. They are not all of their essential basic needs, their universal needs. What is missing are attention, stimulation, affectionate physical contact, and the opportunity to form attachments. These are more the emotional and psychological sides of the essential needs, but these are just as important as food and shelter. Because not having these needs met does not just mean that the child will be less happy. The effect will actually be physical. It will be an effect on the child's health, on the child's height, on the child's brain development. So it has very real physical consequences, just like not providing the child with enough food. I'm not going to go into all of the details of what happens. Some of them were described in the blog. Some of them were described in the book How to Help Not Harm Children. And other books and blogs will follow to give more information. However, I do want to point out one thing which was not mentioned in the blog What Institutionalization Does to Children, and which will have an impact on the story that I'm telling you today. That is one of the possible effects of lack of attachment. When a child grows up in an institution, there are usually much, much fewer opportunities to form attachment with caregivers because there are usually very many children to be taken care of, very few caregivers. So there is very little time to spend individual time with children. Then caregivers tend to change jobs often or are placed in one group and then in another, or children are moved from one group to another. So generally speaking, children in institutions kind of learn that there isn't such a thing as an adult that you can trust, an adult that you can trust to be there for you, to support you, to help you to meet your needs. That is not an experience that they have had. And that is an experience which makes it impossible for their brain to develop and learn how to form attachments. The brain knows how badly it needs things like attention, physical contact, and the opportunity to form attachments. And that is why it will take desperate measures when that opportunity is completely absent. When I go to one of the projects and I am taken home by one of the colleagues to meet their family, the children in their family will watch me from a distance. They will be very curious to see me, I look different. I'm from a different ethnicity and a different skin color. I'm very tall for a woman in their eyes. And I raise a lot of curiosity, but the children will not approach me. They will watch me from a distance for quite some time until their parents' interaction with me, and generally having observed how I act, have kind of made them feel that I can be trusted, that I am not a danger. And this is exactly what a child should do. This is what proper brain development in that area would cause. Children from about 9 months old are supposed to be wary of strangers. And some kids are really scared of strangers, but at least they should hold back when there's a stranger, because there is no way of knowing whether a stranger is a danger or not. So this fear of strangers is a safety mechanism. It is there to keep the child safe and to keep the child alive. When a child grows up in a situation where there is no opportunity for attention, where there's not enough physical contact, and where there are no opportunities for forming attachments, the brain will throw this safety mechanism of fear of strangers overboard in order to have some kind of chance of proper brain development by exploiting any opportunity that might possibly lead to getting attention, physical contact, and an attachment opportunity, whatever the cost to the child's safety. So that is what you see in institutions. When a visitor goes to an institution, they will usually be bombarded by children. All the children will run over to them. They will try to hold their hands, try to sit on their lap, pull their clothes, talk to them, and get their attention. They want in any way at all to make a connection with you. They don't care that you're a stranger. Many people see this as a sign that these children are very friendly and open. But as I've just explained, it's not a sign of friendliness. It's a sign of indiscriminate attachment behavior. So this is something to remember, as it's something that comes up later in the story. And now I think it's time to get started with our story. This story took place a few years ago. And it was the first time I visited this particular institution. And as I was being shown around and getting to know the children in the different dorms, I met a little 18-month-old girl who, for this story, I will be calling Robin. Little Robin lived in a dorm together with 17 other children. She had these 18 children together had one caregiver who was responsible for the care of 18 children aged 1 to 6 years old, and not just their regular daily care, but even having to hand wash their clothes. This lady was very, very busy. Little Robin was not doing very well when I first met her. She was absolutely tiny. She was 63 centimeters, which is the height you would expect in a baby of maybe 6 months old. And she weighed 4.5 kilos, which is the weight you would expect in a 2 or 3 month old baby. She was severely malnourished. She had no energy to speak of. And she was very badly behind in her development, probably due to malnourishment. She would sit on the ground and do very little else. She did not try to crawl. She did not try to stand up. And she did not play. She had no energy left. In this institution, all of the children were fed as much as they wanted. There was no shortage of food. but the diet was not very well balanced. There was a lack of protein and iron, and several of the kids, particularly the smaller ones, did show some signs of malnutrition, but none nearly as bad as little Robin. Initially, because I didn't really have a relationship yet with the management there because I was new, I did casually remark on the fact that she was not looking terribly well and that she might need some help. But at that point, nothing much was done with that. So I decided to observe the situation a little bit longer and to find out what was being done and what was going on. So I spent some more time in that dorm, and what I noticed was, as I said, the caregiver was extremely busy. She only had the time to essentially run from one emergency to the next, or occasionally try to prevent an emergency. So she would react to loud demands if they were made, if she was able to. She wasn't really able to look around and do much else with her time. This meant that Robin, who, as I said, had very little energy left, really wasn't able to make demands anymore. She was not loud enough to be seen. She just sat quietly, which was one of the things that made things simpler in the caregiver's life, not to have to deal with this child's demands as well. The problem was that this led to a vicious cycle. Because she was so weak, she didn't make demands, and because she didn't make demands, she got weaker. Occasionally, I saw Robin make hand gestures to indicate that she wanted to eat or drink something, but this was usually not noticed. It wasn't being ignored, it was just not seen. So it was clear to me that Robin was in a very fragile state. Not only was she malnourished, she was also dehydrated and she had a very bad cough. So once I had a better idea of what the situation was like, I went back to management and I raised the alarm, explaining to everyone that if nothing was done, this child would die. And I explained to them as well that action needed to be taken straight away to give Robin a chance of survival. At that point, there was already no longer a guarantee that she would survive. So this time they did listen, and within an hour, Robin was on her way to hospital. There she was given fluids, and she was diagnosed with bronchitis, for which she was treated. And they started to feed her more. She had a caregiver with her in the hospital, so she was given more attention and she was given more food. And after a week, Robin came home. The only thing she still needed, she was no longer dehydrated, she no longer had bronchitis. The only thing she needed was to eat and gain weight. The thing was that putting this little girl back in a dorm with 17 other children was likely to lead to exactly the same situation again in a very short time. For the time being, at least, she needed one-to-one care to have any kind of hope of really gaining strength and eventually surviving in the long run. So I discussed this with management because it was quite a big problem. There simply weren't the people to provide this girl with one-to-one care. The caregiver of the dorm was no exception in this institution. All caregivers had around 20 children to look after, which meant that if we took a caregiver from somewhere else, there would be 20 unsupervised children in another dorm, and that would not help anyone. So eventually we came to a compromise. it turned out that there was a girl in the institution, a teenage girl, who was refusing to go to school and who sometimes acted as an assistant to one of the caregivers, especially with the smaller children. And when you saw her with the smaller children, it was clear that she had a real heart for these children and also quite a good insight to what they needed and how to handle them. So what was done in the end was we asked this girl, who I will call Christine for the rest of the story to keep things clear, we asked Christine if she would be willing to take care of Robin, to become a de facto foster mother to Robin. And Christine agreed to do this. And with supervision and guidance, Christine did an excellent job. She moved into the dorm and spent almost all of her time together with Robin from that moment onwards. Wherever you saw Christine, you would normally see Robin either on her lap or on her hip. In the first couple of weeks, Christine would make a point of giving Robin something to eat or drink at least once an hour. And gradually, Robin started to gain weight and become stronger and become able to eat proper meals and eat with the other children, having three regular meals plus some healthy snacks in between. She really perked up enormously. And it was not just the food. It was clear that having the attention that Christine was providing her made a big difference as well. 4 months after first meeting Robin, I really was blown away by how different a child she had become. She was actually chubby at this point, and she had grown considerably. She was starting to crawl around and to stand unsupported. Her eyes were much more alert. She would chat and she would giggle. She was a different child. And the thing is that that cannot just be explained by having been given more food. The fact that she received the physical contact, the attention, and the attachment which was forming between Robin and Christine had at least as big an impact on her growth and on her health as the food had. And what showed that was while she was eating a bit more now than she was previously, she still was given the same food as the other children, and that diet was still not balanced. And while, as I said, all the children were allowed to eat as much as they wanted, none of the children could be even remotely be said to be chubby, apart from Robin at that point. So having that attachment made an enormous difference to her. She was also, relatively speaking, growing faster than the other children, now that she was receiving the physical contact that she needed. After leaving this institution, having been there several months, it was more than 2 years before circumstances allowed my visiting it again. When I came back, I was interested to see how the children in this particular dorm were doing. Now, because these children had been between 1 and 6 years old when I previously visited, and because I had been away for more than 2 years, essentially almost none of them could remember who I was. For them, that was such a long time ago. And when I arrived, I was just one of the other foreign volunteers. But when I arrived at the dorm, I was ambushed by 20 children. There were more children per dorm at this point. And just like when I was first introduced there, They all ran over to me. They all wanted to sit on my lap. They pulled my hair. They pulled my hands. They told me things, even though essentially none of them knew who I was. There was one child who was not part of this, and that was little Robin. Robin was standing at a distance, looking at me. She did not approach me, even when Christine tried to encourage her to come over and say hello. And that was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen, because it showed that Robin was properly attached now, and she had her fear of strangers intact the way it was supposed to be. Another few years later, Christine had become an adult, and not surprisingly, she was eager to leave the institution. So she got married and she left, which meant that Robin became one of the group of children in a dorm again. Again, a change was clearly visible, not from one day to the next, but over time. Robin lost her chubbiness. She lost the faster growth than the other children that she had had while Christine looked after her. And she became feisty. She became just like one of the other kids, would go over to any strangers and sit on their lap. All the things that she had, all the things that were protected while she was attached to Christine, eroded gradually over time, unfortunately. Thank you very much for listening, and keep educating yourself on how to help, not harm, vulnerable children, so we can keep moving towards family-based solutions for all children.